Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
After 3 years of hanging out with Jesus, Peter has an interesting reaction. Guards are arresting Jesus, and Peter grabs his fishing knife. It's not a sword in the sense that we think of swords, but something more like a utility knife or a fillet knife. He's a fisherman, after all. And he goes for one of the guards' heads, apparently, and luckily he only got the guy's ear. So Jesus heals the man and tells Peter to put the blade away and says some other things to him. Throughout the Gospels, Peter seems here and there to have a short fuse, this impulsive, reactionary way about him. But this moment is like, this is his, I mean, he really shines here. Deadly assault on behalf of the Prince of Peace. I mean, it's quite a moment. So why does he do it? Well, we could speculate on and on about what motivates him or anybody else to act like this in the circumstances he was in. But at the bare minimum, we could probably agree that Peter does this because this is what people in his context did. If you get the circumstances just right, this is how they react. Great people in his family, the men and women. But if you mess with them in just the right way, you get a reactionary, self-defending mammal. This is simply Peter maintaining his family's cycle. A while back, I was sitting in a cafe, and I'm sitting along the wall, and the next table over is a table like this. It's one of those round tables with chairs on either side, and a couple comes in and starts talking with their coffees in front of them. And within seconds, one of them says, whoa, because the table teeters a little bit, and the guy catches the coffee. But a few minutes later, the woman says something, and when she uses her hand, and it comes down, and it rocks the table again, and her coffee spills over. And there's a lid on it, so that helps some, but there's coffee on the table, and they're laughing, and they wipe it up. And a few moments later, they go back to talking, and as he is speaking, he leans forward on his elbows and tips the table toward himself, and his coffee falls over, and it also has a lid, but some gets out, and it burns his forearm. He tosses out an expletive. She makes some comment about the stupid table. A few minutes later, they're gone. Here comes more people. This woman sits down at the table, her very young child in the chair opposite her with an iPad. I thought, maybe I should say something. Then another thought said, no, stay out of it. A few minutes later, she leans on the table. It rocks toward her. Her coffee wobbles, which triggers her into trying to catch it. But her trying to catch it makes things worse, and she knocks it off the table. And when she raises her arms up in the chaos, now the juice the child has, it goes off the table, catapults onto the floor. It's not a huge mess because the juice and the coffee have lids, but the table has still irritated another couple of patrons. And so I started to throw out some help or a, hey, you're doing great, mom, kind of a thing. But, you know, I didn't want to read as detached or condescending or anything. So I didn't do anything. I just watched. Well, she gets it cleaned up. And a few moments later, she leaves with the child. Then two other women come in. They order coffees. They sit. At this point, I feel like, you know, do I have a civic responsibility to warn these people about the table? But this other part of me is like, how many victims can this table claim? I gotta know. So I'm watching, and I confess I might have been rooting for the table, you know. Sure enough, the table gets tipped one way and then released, and it goes the other. Both cups of coffee slosh some coffee out, napkins to the rescue. They wipe up the surface, gets on their hands, it gets on one of their clothes. But they keep talking. There's like this they sort of silently agree that they should use more caution. But at this point, I'm thinking, you know, this table laughs at your caution. As soon as you drop your guard again, it's going to strike. Both of you are going to be wearing these drinks. And frankly, at this point, like I'm going, table, table, table. You can judge me. I tell stories where I'm the hero, and this one I'm the devil. That's fine. So they keep talking, and this after a couple moments, one of the women, she's gesticulating. She's really into the story she's trying to get across to the other woman. And her elbow does this push and release. And when she does that, her coffee almost launches. It wobbles, bounces side to side. She does a good job catching it with both of her hands before it goes completely over. And I'm thinking, the table has won. She's going to say a cuss word. She's going to leave. The table has claimed another victim. And frankly, I'm going to cancel all my appointments for the rest of the day. I want to see what the carnage this table can cause, you know, in a single day. But here comes a moment maybe some of you are wondering about, and probably all of us have done. The gesticulating woman, she grabs some of the unused dry napkins, and she does this little test rock on the table, and surveying below, she says, "Oh, it's the floor." And then she folds the napkins into a shim and she places it under one of the feet of the table, tests it again. The table doesn't move anymore. And they stayed and talked and had a wonderful time so far as I could tell. So generation after generation of customers, different drinks, different food, different conversations, but the same issues over and over from one group to the next, all of them frustrated with the table, all of them frustrated with what was happening with the drinks. They're all having this bad experience. It was the floor. It was that imbalanced, crooked thing upon which the table couldn't find balance, couldn't find rest. And finally, somebody broke the cycle, not by trying to change the floor or the table or yelling at the floor. They found a way to gently change how the two interacted. I wonder how many of us feel like no matter how hard we try with our life, our thoughts, our emotional reactions, all of our frustrated resolutions this time of year, the things that we decide to, you know, take out, prohibit, avoid, all the misapplied spiritual cliches. I wonder what would happen if we stopped for a season and stood back and realized the floor is crooked. So everything that goes on that floor is going to be a little crooked. If you think this is where I'm going to turn it and say, so you need to build a foundation on Scripture or a foundation on Jesus or something. Look, I'm not denouncing those as much as saying those are abstractions. That stuff looks great on a bumper sticker. But people in my industry, they keep saying that as if they're saying something. But it's only something if we find out a thing to do with it in real life that has substance. So there are no proven formulas in the Bible or the church that fixes your life. So I promise not to pretend like there are. And I respect you enough to tell you that what you're seeking is some sort of formula, you have come to the wrong place. And so you can tune out now and go find a formula if you think it's worth trying. I'm not going to do that. But here's what I will say. And saying it maybe in the spirit of January, where many of us are thinking about how we can tweak or change or fix or perfect ourselves. And several of us, of course, we don't just wait till January. We're always trying it. I'll say this. The floor you and I have our tables on to live and relate and grow at, it's settled. It's finished. The floor is the floor. You can't change the floor. And this is your table. But you can change how your table, how it sits on and interacts with the floor. Or if I pull back from the metaphor a little bit, you can't change the past. You can't change who raised you or in what environment and circumstances that raising happened in. You can't change where you learned to be a person. And your table, your life, this is your life. You can't change your personality or your core self. You are the product of God's making as well as the outcome of a past. You cannot go back and change. So you are you. And yet, you and I can make huge shifts in how we allow our way of being toward ourselves and others and the world. We can change it from being less rooted in a reaction to what hasn't gone well and more rooted in a pursuit of what makes for kindness, what makes for peace, what increases compassion and creativity and curiosity. We can do that. Back in 1992, a psychologist and first name hog named Carl Fred Broderick, he was an author and a speaker on family and marriage therapy. He coined a term that's sort of become popular again, I'm noticing. It's transitional character. Here's how Broderick defines what a transitional character is. He says, A transitional character is one who, in a single generation, changes the entire course of a lineage. The changes might be for good or ill, but the most noteworthy examples are those individuals who grow up in an abusive, emotionally destructive environment and who somehow find a way to metabolize the poison and refuse to pass it on to their children. They break the mold. They refute the observation that abused children become abusive parents, that the children of alcoholics become alcoholic adults, that, quote, the sins of the fathers are visited upon the heads of the children to the third and fourth generation. Their contribution to humanity is to filter the destructiveness out of their own lineage so that the generations downstream will have a supportive foundation upon which to build productive lives. This is a beautiful, inspiring, rallying idea for some of us who do recognize that we come from circumstances that should never be replicated or passed down to anybody. So it's an inspiring, moving way of thinking about breaking cycles in our lives. I was immediately moved by it. On my second pass, though, I felt a little less enthusiastic about parts of it. And on my third pass, I think I found the parts that I thought were great and the parts that I think maybe need to come with a word of caution for most of us. Because even if you've never heard of Broderick or his transitional character concept, you have definitely carried with you a sense in some way that you are called, for lack of a better term, to do better than your forebears. You've maybe heard a similar idea. Maybe you came up with it yourself. Many of us have in our heads in some way, from the day we moved out of our childhood homes, we will never be like our parents. We will do better than the town we grew up in. Better than cousins or siblings or guardians or whatever. We will be better. So one way or another, what Broderick says resonates with us, and it has a lot of beauty and hope in it. But there's a word of caution. So let me say also that I didn't read the book this quote comes from. I'm not critiquing the book or him. This isn't actually about Broderick, especially since the idea of the transitional character has been repeated and expanded on over the last 30 years in other books and TED Talks and counseling circles. I just more want to talk about what's contained in this quote, this idea of the transitional character, why it has so much appeal to us, why it contains for us this vision of what we're trying to do to improve ourselves, but how it actually can't do that for many of us. And why that might be. Because the concept creates other problems. In some ways, worse problems. And one reason it does that is this. It can be understood to be encouraging us to define ourselves by who we are not. And let me spell out what I mean. And I'm not saying that's what he intended. I'm saying that's how it can be understood. Let me tell you what I mean. When we try to be a different person, the person we are who is doing the changing of ourselves, the person trying to fix or reinvent who we are, that is very oftentimes the self-shaming, self-loathing dimension of ourselves at work. So we may be unaware that we are doing an impression of the parent or the caretaker or the context that made us feel deficient somehow. We've adopted or internalized their feelings about ourselves, which is why we feel like we have to be other than we are in the first place. Or more simply, we might not realize that we're trying to solve the problem as the problem. So you can tell when we're carrying forward shame and the belittling that was given to us early in life when we try to change ourselves now out of disgust with ourselves. You can hear it in the way we put it. I'm not going to eat like a pig anymore. I'm not going to be so sensitive anymore. I'm going to stop being so lazy. I'm not going to be such a wimp anymore. I'm going to finally make something of myself. I'm not going to waste any more of my life. See, of course, all that's not the same as stopping those cycles of abuse that he talks about in that quote. But countless of us are still trying to become something other than what we are by using the self-loathing, disgust, and unacceptance we were raised in. We're using that on ourselves. Rather than out of a sense of love and compassion, we try to transform ourselves out of shame and disgust. Well, who does that sound like? That's the voice of people from our past. That's the crooked floor. Still trying to make us into something more acceptable. That's not you. You're doing an impression. How well could that work if it's not you? It's someone else's values that you have onboarded as your own, and maybe you did it so long ago you don't even know where you got it. You've probably been doing it your whole life, and that's why it leads to more bad feelings and not anything like the results that you wanted, because it's not what you actually wanted in the first place. And he talks about parenting, and a lot of us think about this in terms of parenting. It shows up in our parenting too. My parents never helped me. They were never there for me. So I will be there always for my children. Well, that's beautiful. You should be. But sometimes if it's born out of a pendulum swing, we might end up hovering over our children to the point where they can't trust their own judgment. They don't know what to do with failure or discomfort because we never let them experience any of that. They become dependent on outside voices. Or, I'm going to give my kids so much space to discover who they are. I want them to make all their own choices. Great, there can be some real good and beauty in that. And yet, if it's simply countering your own background, we might give our kids so much freedom that they don't have any ground to stand on in their formative years, which leaves them feeling detached, exempt somehow from society, disconnected from their world and other people later on. Or frankly, we can just be really harsh and rigid on our children because we're saying, I want them to turn out better than I did because of the way I was parented. Well, who does that sound like? What does that rhyme with? There are countless examples of how the pain from someone's past is what drives their current sense of what's healthy or just better for themselves, for how they do relationships, for how they parent, whatever it is. But they're not aware how pain and shame are the drivers, and therefore how the results they're going to get are simply going to bring more pain and shame. How many of us keep trying to change the way that we are, the way we think and feel, the way we look? And we don't think about it necessarily front of mind like this, but we do it under a banner of someday I'll be a person I like. Someday I'll be the kind of smart, informed, normal, successful, powerful, attractive, correct person, but I'm not that person yet. There's a future version of myself that if I keep sanding it down and cranking down, I'll finally like that person. Well, I hope you'll hear this. That person will never exist. This future other person, they're not real. You are you. And while we're all on a path to maturing and awakening, a big reason you think current you is a problem is because you internalize somebody else's views and values. And until you realize that, everything that you're trying to change about yourself is going to be coming from the wrong place. And so it won't work. Because what starts in shame ends in shame. And this is what brings me to the word of caution about attempting to be your lineage's transitional character. Most of us correctly assessed the terrible behavior of our upbringing, the narrow-mindedness that we came from, the verbal, the religious, the physical abuse. That stuff's real, and we saw it, and we named it, and we were right about that. Yet, we didn't, in all of that recognizing, learn to recognize how it had shaped us and our own ways of reacting to things. So rather than setting out for healing and breaking cycles, we instead took our broken self, formed an identity about who we're not and who we will never be like, and then plopped ourselves down somewhere else to let pain play out in just another way. And frankly, that's what a lot of our family members had attempted too. This is why our attempt to be a transitional character can look more like our becoming all of a sudden the judgmental family member with some newfound superiority complex. The young married couple who suddenly knows better than the rest of the friends and family what kids need and don't need. The eager, zealous new faith convert who alone has discovered what is true and what is false. Or the one who's gotten sober and now sees all the people of his past and then his family is pathetic and stupid and weak. Or the one who found out about boundaries and so then has reduced all the other human beings, family, friends, everybody, to words like toxic or triggering or little more than an entity to be avoided. And the thing is, there's real merit in a lot of that stuff. There are very real circumstances where the best and wisest thing you could have done is a full breakaway. I've got to go in a completely other direction. And I want to say that. I hope anybody in an abusive situation especially can get away from that and break the cycle by removing themselves completely by any means that they can. But what many of us are coming to see is that the brokenness, the wounds, that's who showed up within us to address the brokenness and the wounds. The ashamed, hurt person is who is at the wheel trying to make New Year's resolutions and commitments to emotional or physical health. It's the person still in a reactive posture to the past, trying to make a vision for the future. And that's why the cycles won't break, because the cycle is actually being sustained. But That doesn't mean nothing works. There is a shift that can happen. And some of us can start to find this shift as early as our 20s, but that's rare. I think most of us find it in our 40s and 50s, where we realize that the resolutions, the cycle breaking, the changes that we're pursuing for ourselves, how we react to others, rather than being driven by shame and pain, it comes to be driven by something higher within ourselves. Rather than coming from the same level of consciousness that made us think there was something wrong with us in the first place, instead, we develop and mature ourselves more lovingly, changing our engagement to the world, changing our reactions and our views of others as those whose eyes are starting to see through a lens of kindness and understanding, through the gentle, continued effort of peace and curiosity, the discipline of compassion and acceptance. So we're not simply not trying to not turn out like somebody else did. We're finding ourselves drawn to love. So much so that even when there are boundaries and some honesty about some terrible things that have happened, because they really did for a lot of us, we're about healing for ourselves, for all of us. Not just the removal and reinvention of myself, but for healing. This is what we're trying to do together. And I confess and admit, some of us, we're not ready for that. What happened was too awful. You're not ready for that yet. That's okay. We're going to try to get there together. This is what we're about together, now and in the future. This is why we don't just label things. That's a sin. You need a new identity. That's about forgiveness and personal transformation. Those are important ideas, but we try to tease them out through the lens of becoming aware of ourselves, because this work starts in the hard to recognize places within. This is part of why we see Jesus in the Gospels telling others, clean the inside of the dish first. The outside will work itself out just fine. Clean the inside of the dish. Remove the stuff from your own eye. Then after that, you'll see clear enough to see the stuff that is probably in other people's eyes. But if you really want to see it, get the log out of your own eye first. This is the paradox of change. So often, acceptance and awareness, not tinkering and contorting things, it's acceptance and awareness that leads to actual change. And even as we do this, there may need to be boundaries, new habits, new practices to replace old practices, less yeses and more nos, and some real challenges and difficulties in how we have to interact with those people who hurt us that are still around. That's real. But the work is being done out of a growing sense of love, out of awareness and peace, because we've started with grace and awareness within ourselves. We move toward ourselves in awareness and acceptance, and then we move toward others with the same spirit from this light of love. Then, and maybe only then, so far as I can tell, do cycles actually have a chance to break. And understand this, beginning with ourselves is not blaming ourselves for what happened. It doesn't pretend terrible things didn't happen. It's simply learning to accept there's nothing we can do about the floor. And it certainly doesn't help to wage war against the table. It's learning over time to apply compassion, patience, wisdom, grace to the gaps and the pain those gaps have caused, knowing we can't control or change anything except for how we deal with that. So toward the back of the New Testament, there are a couple letters with Peter's name on them, 1 and 2 Peter, and it's supposed to be the same Simon Peter from the Gospels. There's a strong possibility it's not him, but it's nothing to argue about. The bottom line is that it comes to us later in the story as being the same sword-wielding Simon Peter, but now a little different, because he's in the same context, he's in the same spaces with the same people in the same area, but he's not continuing in the same cycles, it looks like. Peter doesn't become regarded as, you know, the patron saint of attempted murder. He doesn't seem like the same sort of person, even though he's the same person. He apparently came to learn how to shim some napkins where the crooked foundation had caused unwanted reactions for people and his family before. So he says this, "Finally, all of you, have unity of spirit, compassion, love for one another, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Don't repay evil for evil or abuse for abuse, but on the contrary, repay with a blessing." It just seems to me like the guy was learning how to not simply try to reinvent himself by shaming where he came from or some sort of superiority thing or focusing on what's wrong with everybody else or, you know, shaming his previous self. He looks like a guy waking up to who he really is. Just like we can all wake awaken to who we really are. Love, made in the image of love, trying to shine through all of the junk that's blotted that out for so long. And I won't pretend to know what his path was. And I told you before, there are no formulas. But here are some general considerations that I think the Spirit of Christ invites us into. Those of us who sense that, okay, there's nothing we can do about the floor. We can't do anything about the past or the context in which we learned how to be people, how to live in each other's midst. We sense still that we're being invited to live with our heart open, our bodies and minds healthy, the negative, disgusted, shaming voices understood to be not our own and certainly not the voice of Christ. Those of us who have the sense that the true transitional character is one who's waking up to who they actually are, not just who they're not going to be. Those of us that sense that that's what we're going to be about. Here are a few napkins that we can try. One, make a habit of hearing how much judgment you aim at yourself, how often you condemn yourself. I'm not talking about making silly, self-deprecating comments like I realized halfway through this. My appearance is really giving off a strong John Fetterman vibe. Take that however you want. I'm talking about watching how often we tell ourselves that we can't do something, that we're not fit for it, that I'm an idiot. I just can't do that. I'm deficient. I'm just not the kind of person who can blank. Sometimes we say we're being playful, but it's judgment. So practice telling that voice, not judgmentally, but gently, hey, rehearsing and insisting on my own inabilities, that's not my voice. That's something I brought in from the outside a long time ago that made me acceptable. I recently made the mistake, by the way, of saying I'm not built to do math in front of our student pastor and former Durham math teacher, Jennifer Tuttle. That didn't go how I planned. She helped me see very quickly and would not let me get away with it. She helped me see it's a lie that I've been telling myself since I was very young because a teacher suggested maybe I'm just inherently not good at math. Notice how much we say self-limiting, self-judging things, that voice in our head all the time, and just gently ask it to step down because I'm more about seeing what I'm actually capable of. Two, practice acceptance. Allow everything. It's wildly unnatural for those of us who have come up in contexts that judge and partition everything into, you know, I like that, but I don't like that. And that's okay, but that has a Bible verse against it. It's really difficult. It's going to take practice. Think of yourself as someone who will eat everything put in front of them. If it's happened, then I accept that it has happened, because to not accept it is only going to affect my peace. See others as being other than you are, behaving and believing other than you believe and behave, and accept that this difference, the vast majority of the time, demands nothing from you. You can just accept it, allow it. Now, if your mind is right now going to, yeah, but what about all the terrible things I can't accept that people have done to me or to others? Yes, that's real. There are all those things. But understand, acceptance is not approval, necessarily. Some things and some people cause others, maybe you, pain. Well, we're not saying that's acceptable. We're saying that we accept it because with or without my feelings, that's what has happened. And the actions I might need to take about that are going to come from somebody who has practiced thoughtfulness, that practices moving in goodness and wisdom and love, not just the reflexes of I don't like it and I'm not going to put up with it. Those reactivity patterns that we have. Practice accepting that you knocked over the houseplant. There's dirt all over the floor. That's what happened. The car's headlights burn out when it's time, not when you request it. That uncle, he always says terribly ill-considered things to his nieces and nephews. Your boss has tunnel vision about what success means, and that pertains to maybe her own childhood, what she's working out. You have strong emotions about things. It seems like stronger than other people's. People, eat it all. Allow it all. And then where love and justice and wisdom lead, respond from that. Here's a third one. We'll stop with three. Pause. Go slow and pause. If you haven't figured it out yet, pausing before deciding or talking or acting, it's almost the key to everything. Most of us were raised on the wobbly floor of reactions and impulsive speech, the ready, shoot, aim kind of talking and acting. The pause napkin always fits. We could say pause after every one of these messages and it would fit. This one always fits. You only need to be immediate during a game or when you're being attacked by lions and cobras. For everything else outside of games and being attacked by a predator, pause so you can keep your highest self at the wheel for your sake and for the sake of ending all the cycles we were born into that were so much about reactivity. So many things that we said or were said to us that leaves a mark for decades. Pause. Now, there are more. Like I said, we'll get to those. Where this is the work we're about together. So whether I've caught you early in your 2024 resolutions or your just ongoing effort to figure out how to be what the Spirit made you to be, this is what we're up to together. And so I hope you'll keep the conversation going with us to discover other angles on this, how forgiveness or defensiveness, patience, repentance, healing, how those play a role in it. All of this and more we're intending to get to this year. But for now, I'll close with a benediction from Peter's words in 1 Peter. Finally, all of us, may we have unity of spirit with each other and with ourselves, compassion, love for one another and ourselves, a tender heart and a humble mind. May we not repay evil for evil or abuse for abuse. May we find the shim that gets us out of reactive living with others or even our own mind and body, and shim the crooked floor with a blessing. Amen.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.